The purpose of the bill and the purpose of a probation period is to enable employers to take a chance with new employees without facing the risk of expensive and protracted personal grievance procedures that will enable people who have not had previous work experience to find their first job and to make it easier for people to re-enter the workforce. That will enable growth and productivity in the New Zealand economy. And it's worth noting right at the outset the latest unemployment figures. For youth unemployment, the rate is for general youth 15 to 19, it's 14%. For those 20 to 24, it's 7.5%. But for Māori youth unemployment, 15 to 19, it's 26.3%. In short, more than a quarter of all Māori between the ages of 15 and 19 are actually unemployed. It does reduce, obviously, for those over 20 to 24, where it's, but it's still 13.4%. And it's that amongst perhaps almost the prime reason why this bill is being promoted. It's to enable people to get an opportunity to get that first job, to get a break. And the way it does that, as the bill makes clear and as this paper I've given to you, is that it provides for a probationary period which will not lead to personal grievance procedures. The length of the period is 90 days, but of course there is a provision, as one would expect in a freedom of contract environment, for people to agree that there will be no probation period. So it is an issue that's an option for agreement. It's not mandatory, as some people have indicated. Now, the bill essentially achieves its objectives by replacing the existing Section 67 with a new provision, or a new part to the Act, Part 666AA, which provides, in the first instance, for a probationary period, and then provides some of the rules around that probationary period. And 69AD, a new section 69AD, limits the dispute procedures, particularly around personal grievances. Those details are set out in the paper that I've distributed. New Zealand is a country of small businesses, perhaps more than virtually any other country in the world. And this bill will be of huge assistance to small businesses. Actually, they're much more likely to use it than large businesses with their HR departments and much more sophisticated ways of dealing with employment disputes. But 90% of New Zealand businesses are actually five or less employees, and it's those people who find the complexity of the current legislation difficult, and of course the costs of getting it wrong in terms of employment decision being much more heavily on a small business. You know, the costs of a personal grievance procedure, not just in terms of the award, but in terms of the time taken out, is a much bigger percentage of the total time available to that business, a much bigger percentage of management time, and it's much more keenly felt by the manager, which will in fact be the owner, to not make go through that process again. It'll make them risk-averse if they have to go through the personal grievance procedure. And that's the reason why there are so many submissions on the bill from smaller employees. They may not be making them orally, but there are literally hundreds of submissions that have been received by smaller employees in support of the bill. Now, there has been concern that the bill will strip away all rights for employees. And I was very concerned and careful to ensure that fundamental human rights are protected, and that's why the bill provides specific provision to enable people to go to the Human Rights Tribunal, particularly around major discrimination. You know, no one goes into the workforce and gives up their fundamental human rights. That's not what's been asked here. It's much more specific than that. It's related to essentially the personal grievance procedures. And similarly, obviously people have rights to holiday pay, sickness leave and the like, and those are protected under the Holidays Act. There is one particular issue on reviewing the bill where I make reference to section 131, that's contained on page 2, section 69. That actually covers wage arrears, and that particular provision shouldn't have been in there. Obviously, people have got to have the right to sue for their wages and wage arrears. And
that's
on page 2. It's under section 69 AD, limitation on recourse to dispute settlement. And it says that no proceedings should be initiated under section 131. Well, that actually relates to wage arrears, and that should not have been in there. People clearly have got the right and should have the right to be able to sue for wages. One of the other issues that is regularly comes to the fore is the failings of section 67. Now, those people who are opposed to the bill say, what's the complaint? After all, section 67 already exists in the Employment Relations Act 2000, and that provides for probation periods. The difficulty with the section, and the reason why I'm effectively substituting my bill for that section, is that it provides for full personal grievance procedures. And that is precisely the difficulty that people have in the first 90 days. They want to be able to make the employment decision, work out whether a person works in the team without the risk of that decision being essentially second-guessed by the Employment Relations Tribunal or be subject to mediation, which, as I say, is not just a question of money, it's also a question of time, management time, and then effectively making people risk-averse. So Section 67, as currently structured, simply doesn't work because it doesn't actually improve the situation. You might as well not have it, because effectively all the personal grievance procedures are contained with it anyway, and that's why it's not in fact used to any extent. New Zealand is the only country in the OECD that does not have a proper probation period. I mean, I appreciate it's got Section 67, but that is not a proper probation period. The OECD in its country report on New Zealand in 2003 and 2004 made specific reference that it was necessary for New Zealand to change the law in this area, that the absence of a probation period was a constraint on growth. And for those of you who might say that New Zealand's had buoyant economic growth in recent years, what we haven't had is good productivity growth. And every country that is better off than New Zealand actually has higher productivity growth. And higher productivity growth is about making the workplace environment easier. And so if every other OECD country has a proper probation period and New Zealand doesn't, and the vast majority of OECD countries are actually more prosperous than New Zealand, then you have to ask the fundamental question, have we got it right? Are we the outsider country, if you will, have we got it right and they've got it wrong? Well, I say to you, if they're actually all more wealthier than we are, clearly we are the ones who have to review if we want to improve productivity. The paper that I've distributed lists a whole bunch of countries, in fact all of the OECD countries, and their rules. Now this was taken from an older document, obviously, because, of course, more recently Australia has changed its rules, and they now have a six-month probation period. In Britain, which is obviously a Labour government country, their provision is 12 months, and they specifically make reference that people for the first 12 months do not have access to the personal grievance procedure. Now, what is personal grievance actually about? I guess that's what you have to sort of focus on. It is essentially the employer's decision to end the employment contract being contested and challenged in the courts. That first came into our law in 1973, and effectively I'm saying at least for the first 90 days, that's an unreasonable restriction on the ability for the people to manage their own businesses and give young people the chance. You'll notice that there's a whole range of periods in the OECD. I chose 3 months quite deliberately. It's actually at the lower end of the OECD. As say, Britain, it's 12 months. Australia, our closest competitor, it's 6. Canada is 3. Most of Europe is 3, although in some cases it's 12. Ireland, fast-growing economy, it's 12 months. And you can see the ranges of choices that the OECD countries have made. I think for New Zealand to have a faster growing economy, which actually means dealing with particularly youth unemployment, we need to have a probation period. In particular, we're in an economic competition with Australia. New Zealanders are voting with their feet in large numbers. They are going to Australia. Australia has higher productivity than New Zealand. That's for a variety of reasons, but employment law is one of them. And if we essentially shackle ourselves with restrictive employment law, we just make it that much harder to catch up to Australia. And I think everyone around this table knows the truth of the fact that people are leaving New Zealand for Australia, irrespective of people's individual politics. I might bear on some of the close on some of the issues that have been raised since the bill was put into the House. At the time of the debate, Mr. Peter Brown raised the question of the casual workforce, short-term employees, in essence. And I indicated that in Netherlands that was dealt with by essentially having a split system, a one-month period for short-term employees as opposed to longer employees. You'll notice Italy, they've got down here blue-collar 1 to 2 weeks, white-collar 3 to 8 weeks. So it's not unusual to have different periods for different types of workforces, and I think in the New Zealand case that is one issue that needs to be clearly looked at. You'll notice this, if you've read some of the submissions, the question of a voluntary code comes up. You know, should employees be given some indication during the 3 months of, you know, where they need to improve their performance? Because it is all about actually building a workforce team. And that's one of the issues that I imagine the SLIC committee will be focused on. There have been issues around the stand-down period, which is not directly covered, obviously, by this bill because that's related to subsequent or other legislation under the Department of Social Welfare, but that is obviously one of the issues that you'd also want to take into account. I mean, the truth is the Select Committee process is the opportunity for the Parliament as a whole to essentially hear the range of issues that come from presenting a bill. But the key goal here, and I want to stress this, is to make it easier for people to get, in particular, that first job, and particularly youth who have got a much higher unemployment rate than others, new migrants, I'm sure along with many other constituency MPs in particular, but also MPs, particularly where there's high immigration, all MPs, you'll be receiving many complaints from migrants that they can't get a break. They can't get that opportunity to get that first job. And again, this will make it easier for them. So that is what this bill is aimed at doing. Helping people get that first job in particular, helping particularly small business to make the choice to add that extra person on without the risk of that if it doesn't kind of work out, they then end up in court taking up a lot of time, not just in money, but also in management time that could otherwise be used for the business.
Thank you. Do you accept that there's an underlying policy in our relation to good faith?
Yes, it is part of the Employment Relations Act, often breached by the unions.
You say it's a, do you accept it underlying policy, though?
It's certainly in your legislation.
And do you accept this bill undermines that?
No, I do not. This bill is all about making it easier to, in fact, make that initial employment decision. That's why 3 months was chosen.
But it takes away any litigation rights by an employee, which is the opposite of good faith relationship.
It essentially makes it the employer's decision, if they choose not within the 90-day periods to continue the employment, that decision should not be then second-guessed by an authority. Because they're the ones who have to work out whether a person works, fits in a team or not.
And one other question is related to your international comparison. You haven't included the clauses, included some of the time periods. Are you saying in this submission that the countries you list have clauses equivalent to your book?
Essentially what's removed in the probation period, certainly in Britain and in Australia, is access for personal grievances. And that's a particular subset of rights that people have. I mean, people have a whole range of rights. Sickness leave, holiday pay, joining a union. I think that was one of the issues that was raised. Wage arrears and the rights against harassment, discrimination and the like. People don't surrender those kinds of rights, and neither should they. It's really around challenging outside of that whether a person fits into a team or not. And for the first 90 days, that shouldn't be challenged.
My question was, are you telling us that the countries you list have clauses in their legislation equivalent to the provisions of your bill?
I'm saying Britain and Australia certainly do. You can't take a personal grievance procedure in that period. I haven't checked each and every clause. I've gone by the OECD summary. I've checked Britain and Australia, though, specifically.
Just a simple one. In the situation in our area, we have a lot of short-term workers, Kiwi workers and all that. Do you think that period should be reduced to a month for those short-term workers?
Yes, I think that is a genuine issue, and I can see a reasonable way of going forward on that. Otherwise, if people have, let's say, take Kiwi Fruit workers or other casual workers whose contracts are, or short-term workers, are three months or less, then they would never have any rights, and that would seem a bit unfair. So I think, and that's why in a number of jurisdictions they do have split periods.
Thank you. You say that this, the purpose of this is so that young workers can gain their first job. But in fact, the recent employment figures that came out in 2005 for the March quarter show that per quarter, 297,000 employees per quarter in New Zealand changed jobs and had a new employer and eventually fall into this category. That's over 1 million New Zealand workers a year. Now, clearly, 1 million workers each year are not all in that category that you describe. So, how can you say that the objective is for young workers in their first job when clearly there's more than 1 million New Zealand workers that this bill would apply to if it was passed every year?
Well, probably not half the workforce actually changes their job. I mean, the workforce in New Zealand is 2 million, and not half of it changes their job.
But I
suspect what is happening, some people are getting quite a lot of short-term jobs, and so you'll get essentially cycling through. That is one of the issues, no doubt, that the Select Committee will be dealing with. I mean, that has been an issue that's been raised with me by quite a range of people. A number of employers say, well, even if a person has had a previous work history and so forth, we still need to have a period of time to assess whether they work fit within their particular team. So they certainly would prefer it to sort of be a general coverage for essentially all employees. Bear in mind, of course, people can contract out of the provision. It's not mandatory in that sense, because I'm not intending to cut across freedom of contract. You know, if people want to say, actually, if I'm shifting from, say, Auckland to Wellington to get a job, that's a pretty big decision. I'm only going to do that if there is, you agree that there won't be a probation period. That's provided for in the bill, because there ought to be freedom of contract. I made, and a number of unions have raised that's an issue for them in their collective contracts. Well, that's freedom of contract. That's what they negotiate. So I suspect it would not apply in every single case. But I do think it's particularly important for smaller employers to say that that's where they don't have the sophisticated administrative systems. The ERA, notwithstanding Labor's views on it, has imposed significantly higher compliance costs on them, and they find it difficult to comply. Even the requirement for everyone to have a written contract is frequently in the smaller employer field just ignored.
But on that point, because as you're aware, I come from an area that is almost all small business in the greater Waikato area, and the feedback that I have from small business is that their number one issue is actually being able to recruit people to the jobs that they've got, getting skilled people to apply for these positions. How is this bill going to help resolve that issue?
Well, you clearly talk to different business people than I talk
really?
To. Yes, so, you do,
so,
obviously,
so
because
they're
saying,
a lot of people
well,
their jobs.
The government's own small business advisory group said the single most important recommendation they had for unemployment law was a probation period. That's the government's own small business advisory group, which actually is made up of small business people. So that is the truth of the situation.
I looked at the submissions also coming from those small business people, and I noted that most of them followed exactly the same format. So they, I understand what you're saying about them not having the resources, because they clearly could have even put their own storyboard in their submissions. But also, I mean, I note that I couldn't see any of those small business people describing a situation that they had personally been in where the workers having rights to personal grievances for the first 3 months had actually, where they had a personal experience of that being a problem.
Well, actually,
so can you quantify that? What sort of percentage?
Well, actually, quite a few submissions I fundamentally dispute with what you've just said, having read the bulk of those submissions. In fact, many of them refer to personal experiences, and you'll be hearing from that during the select committee process. They will tell you about, you know, I wish we'd had a probation period because we'd been bound to find out whether the person actually did fit in the team, and they have been deterred, and they will tell you that.
Have you got any
Peter Brown's got the next question. Sorry, so we've only got about 4 minutes
before the first. Okay. Wayne, you spoke at length, but you spoke for some time on people leaving New Zealand for Australia. What impact will this bill have on it?
Well, essentially, as I see it, it's all about boosting New Zealand's productivity, and part of that is actually helping small businesses grow. A more vibrant economy means more growth. More growth means more wages and salaries, higher incomes, and that's what keeps people in New Zealand. And growing an economy requires a whole series of little things, all locking together. And when governments keep putting up more and more restrictions, more and more compliance costs, as the current government has done over a number of periods, and you've been hearing that, even a complaint from that from local government this week, it just basically it stifles productivity growth, and New Zealand's productivity growth is substantially lower than Australia's. We ought to be taking a lesson from it. Just look at what's actually happening between the two countries.
By and large,
last question, Peter.
Well, I just want to clarify this. By and large, most of the people going to Australia are employed here. There's not too many of the long-term unemployed or the people you're targeting, new migrants to get a first job, that are actually emigrating to Australia from the 600 or whatever it is per week. They are employed here and they are leaving. I agree that there's a concern that they're leaving, but they're leaving for getting better conditions, employment and what have you. And with due respect, I can't see that this bill will change that one iota.
Which simply leads to less compliance costs. Less compliance cost leads to less costs, generally, and that means higher productivity. I mean, that is one of the fundamental economic lessons that this country has had to learn over the last 20 years.
I'd just like to touch on the small businesses a bit more because I think it's quite critical to the bill that you're proposing. And one is just on the nature of small businesses and with the skill shortages that we are currently undertaking and with the unemployment levels as they are. The feedback that we're getting from small businesses is that with such a small pool, what you're actually a pool of people, what you're having to do is actually entice people into different careers, take people that are unskilled and less skilled in different areas. Can you sort of explain then how this will help them actually take that risk on those sorts of employees that perhaps are, A, changing careers, so are not as skilled, are younger, as you said, with new migrants. You certainly have people that are coming over with skills and levels at that, but it's unproven in our market. And is that really the intention of the 90-day probation period, to actually give employment to those sorts of people and help small businesses in trying to reach out to a different workforce that they're currently not touching?
Well, in all the discussion I've had so far, I have tended to emphasise youth workers, new migrants and small businesses. And I do that because actually the unemployment rates amongst those groups are way higher than the rest of the community. And clearly you've got to get some people out of dependency, for whatever reason, into the workforce. And this is one way of doing it, particularly when a very large number of those people are going to be employed in small businesses. This measure will be used much more frequently by small businesses than large businesses, simply because of these structural differences between those two types of firms that I've already indicated. So it seems to me it will make it a lot easier for small businesses to take a chance. You know, if you've got five employees and you make a mistake with that one of those people you've employed, that's 1/5 of your workforce. And you can imagine if it doesn't work out, the amount of distraction that will cause, not just for the employer, but the other employees, the flow of work and so forth. It's a big thing for a small employer to employ that extra fifth person. Not a big thing for Telecom with several thousand employees to employ an extra person, but it's a big thing for a small employer. And I think we actually need to be helping small employers have the confidence to make that decision without the worry that they'll end up in court if it's not doesn't work out within the first 90 days. It's not a mistake that the small business advisory group made the recommendation.
Talk to us about those mistakes, because the mistakes are not always about necessarily group performance. Those mistakes are not always about someone not doing what is acceptable within the workforce and getting perhaps dismissed for those reasons. Are they not always also for very many other reasons, such as a mechanic who's going into a call centre environment to do more of an AA type thing and finding out if he actually can drop tools and going behind a desk is actually classic, because it's just such a different environment, and actually employer and employee have no idea how they're actually going to respond to that completely contrasting employment sort of situations. And a probation period gives actually both of them a chance to find out without penalty.
I'm sure that is correct, and that's exactly what and I'm sure that's exactly the experience. It leads to a more flexible workforce. Young people today routinely expect to change their jobs. They're experimenting a lot more. They need the freedom to be able to do that to a much greater extent than exists currently. A lot of the submissions that we hear seem to be based on people being in the same job forever and forever and forever. But in truth, the workplace is a lot more flexible. This bill is part of making that an easier process.
Thank you, Wayne. There's a couple of statements you made, and I appreciate, and I'm sure the rest of the committee would have some evidence just to back up the statement. One is that statement that the group rate is often breached by unions. Why do people provide us with a breakdown of the cases that have been taken against unions that have breached good faith versus the cases that have been taken by...
Called strikes.
I'm asking, under the law, good faith is defined. And you've said in your evidence that it's often breached by unions. If you could provide us with...
I was specifically talking about strikes.
I wonder if you could just provide us with the evidence to back that statement.
Just told you what it is. I was specifically talking about strikes.
Maybe the committee will ask for that evidence to be presented, because it's on record in the courts as to who takes breaches of good faith. It's a common thing in the courts.
Yes, I realise that, but I was specifically talking about strikes.
Now, the other thing is that I'm interested that the objective of the bill is to get the hard end of the employment market into work, the young people, Māori, etc., which is a very laudable objective. And that will lead to greater productivity growth in New Zealand. I'm just not quite sure how that works, that if we employ more people who are hard to employ, and we're able to get rid of them easier, that this will lead to a productivity growth that will take us up to the rest of the OECD. So if you've got evidence on that, I think we'd appreciate it.
Well, I think you answered your own question. Making it easier to employ those people in the first instance is clearly going to lead to them building skills.
I'm talking about productivity growth, not employment growth, because you made it.
Yeah, no, skills will ultimately lead.
Even though we have better unemployment figures than any of those people we compare them with, you're saying that we're behind on productivity. If we can sack people more easily, that will lead to greater productivity in New Zealand. I very much appreciate receiving the evidence on that. because it's a new one that I haven't heard of yet. Anyway, welcome back to the other end of the table. We're going to have our first submissioners, who are the New Zealand Council of Trade Unions, if they'd like to come to the table. I'll have to buy 5 minutes. So